Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, and I'm really excited about today's show. I think it's going to be some very interesting conversation. But before I tell you what we're doing there, I just want to remind you that we're more than a podcast. So visit mightyparenting.com to see what we have to support you as you travel this parenting journey through the teen and 20-something years. So today we are handling one of those big nagging questions that we all have as parents. And that question is, am I doing it right? And I know that's a nagging question because I talk to parents and they express that concern. I've had that concern. I know Tom and I have asked ourselves that many times over the years. When one of our girls was younger and clingy and people kept saying, oh, you got to push her to do more on her own and move away from her and, you know, push her to be stronger. Tom and I made our choices and then we went, are we doing this right? And when our other daughters struggled with some mental health issues, those were definitely times where I asked myself, and I'm sure Tom did too, you know, did I say the right thing? Did I do the right thing? Am I handling this right? Are we picking the right direction? And now with them finishing off college and getting ready to head out on their own into the world and having to step back again, some days I ask myself more than ever before, am I doing this right? It's one of those tough questions of parenting, and Dr. Stephen Fonzo is here to answer it for us. Dr. Fonzo is the founder and creative director of Verisent Life. He has a reputation for helping people accelerate health and healing. He's now branched out in his work, and he is teaching parents, educators, and team leaders how to best manage their inner status while working with children, how to get the most out of children's potential, as well as providing strategies to overcome the challenging stresses of everyday life. His new book, Finding Magic in the Mess, teaches people about living in presence, connection, gratitude, love, and unity. So we are going to be exploring some interesting concepts today. Dr. Fonzo, welcome to Mighty Parenting. Thanks for taking time to join us on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to get this underway. This is great. Thank you.
Well, you're a father, and in your book, you said that as your kids got a little older, you were able to see the stress in your home and how you and your family were creating it, and creating it for no reason at all. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? I found that a very interesting concept.
Sure. You know, I think as parents, I'm a father of three, and so there's those everyday interactions that tend to bog us down, send us even into patterns of suffering, like feeling just like, God, when is this going to end? Feeling disconnected. So the everyday experiences can definitely throw you in varying emotional states, let's say. And what I found over time, just in investigating, you know, parenting, but also just be an observer of life, is that a lot of the stress that we go through really is perceived by us as stress, but it's actually not stress. It's fuel for our growth. And that's what really kind of the book Finding Magic in the Mess is really about. It's about turning something that we perceive as stress in our everyday life and turning it in such a way that we're providing a much more robust meaning to the experience. And it's a way to recover. It's a process of resilience, and it has us more energized and more resourceful state. So it's taking some of these little things and stretching the meaning of them. And I gave an example of even, you know, having your child, you know, tying their shoes, and the frustration that we get when they're not tying their shoe up. You know, that was when my kids were younger, and just even the frustration, it wasn't just me being the parent of frustrated with shoe tying. It was multiple parents and even parents in my practice. And so, you know, I gave these things reasonable consideration and thought as to, you know, what's really going on behind something like this. And essentially it comes back to our own inner experience, our own well-being, how much energy we have for the moment. and what our kind of emotional reserve battery is at the time of all these events. So it still comes back to kind of us responsible as parents to maximize our resilience and our energy. And I find that when that becomes a bit of a focus, a lot of the other things that happen in daily life become obsolete. If not, they don't even show up. So that was one way to see that, geez, maybe a lot of these issues or circumstances that we're experiencing in daily stressors are brought on by our whatever level of well-being we're at. And the greater our well-being, these problems just seem to start to vanish, if not just resolve their own. Or you're at least in a situation or a state where you can strategize much more accurately as to what next best steps are for you and your family.
Couple of really interesting things in there, but first I want to talk about this word resilience, because I keep hearing about this in terms of our kids. And we've certainly had many guests talking about building resilience in our kids. Our kids need to be more resilient. They will be happier if they're more resilient. They'll be emotionally healthier if they're more resilient. Got that. But you're the first person who said, hey, parents, look at your resilience, because your lack of resilience is creating stress in your life. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, 100%. And, resilience is an interesting word. It comes from the root word resilio, which means to spring back. And, essentially, if you're, number one, if you're alive, you're springing back regularly. That's, we have two parts to our system as a human being. One part is the stress system, the fight or flight system, which I'm sure most people are aware of that system. And then there's the rest and recover. It's called the parasympathetic nervous system. It's the other half of our balancing system. And that's the system that gets activated for rest and rejuvenation, and really allows the spring back mechanism in resilience. And so there's the fight or flight, which uses energy and kind of puts you through the grind and the stress hormones. And then there's the flip half of the system, which is our rest, relax, and digest system. And that essentially is part of the recovery and the energy building and the spring back mechanism to produce resilience. And gratitude for a parent, gratitude and appreciation and providing situations with greater meaning actually activates that part of the nervous system to have it spring back so that you can actually be resilient. And so I do put the emphasis on parents for sure, their level of resilience, because if they're springing back and they're in a high energy state, they're in a most opportune state to manage the home. And when we're getting low on the battery, so to speak, and when we're not springing back, then we're grasping at straws, we're trying to micromanage, we're trying to control our environment, all as a means to attempt to control the energy, because we don't have enough energy to make through. And so the more energy parents have in terms of that spring back of resilience, the more energy they have to manage their home and the less they have to control. The more you're controlling, if you're trying to control, constantly control your environment, you're low on energy. You're trying to manage the energy of your environment because you're low on energy and you're not springing back. So yeah, I definitely emphasize the return of awareness back to the parent.
My brain is going about 100 miles an hour, and I'm just taking a moment here to assimilate what you said, and I'm taking it and I'm thinking about my life and my circumstances. So one of the things I noticed in our household, which you're gonna have to tell me exactly how this ties in, because I get that it does, but I thought of it differently, so I'm having a little trouble switching gears here. When me, mom, is busy, I do shift gears. I shift into this place where I'm hyper-focused. I'm trying to get from point A to point B as quickly as I can. And I am more rushed. I don't take the time to step back and really listen. I don't have that sort of softer feeling around me. It's like get in, tell me what you need, get out of my face. And if something needs to be done, I'm more than likely going to just do it myself, because at this moment, I don't have time to talk to you people, to explain about it, to make sure you did it. You know, I'm just going to do it. And it's something I did identify years ago, that when I just have more on my plate, or probably too much on my plate, that is what happens. What I'm trying to do is kind of take that idea and put it into what you talked about how much energy we have and how we start trying to control our environment, because I'm kind of seeing some ties there.
Mm-hmm. So can you maybe just describe a little bit more of, and I'm pretty sure I think I hear what you're saying. Very busy, and trying to manage all of the activities and meet the needs of everyone in your environment. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. Yes. So obviously I work, I have Mighty Parenting, I have my stress relief coaching that I do. I do yoga, nidra guided meditations. I'm a wife, I'm a mom, and we all have our duties around the house. One of mine that I took on is food, because I like to keep things there going a certain way, and people pitch in. But, you know, essentially, mm-hmm. That's mine. So that's a daily thing, right? You got to deal with this every day and, you know, get this on the table and deal with other people's schedules and things. And then, you know, we're sharing vehicles because we're a four-person family, but we are not a four-vehicle family, even though the girls both drive. So that's kind of normal life. And so for example, we're recording this interview, but at the time of recording, anyone who is hanging out with me on my personal social media and stuff knows that I'm busy right now. I am planning events for the new year. I am putting new things in place. And that was one of those moments where I saw that I just wasn't or couldn't or wouldn't take the extra time. My husband was asking me stuff yesterday and I kept interrupting him because I'm ready to jump to the end. I got it. You know, I got all the information I need. I don't need to listen to you explain the whole thing. Here's my answer. It's, you know, those little things that come into play, which are going to make them feel unimportant, uncared for. You know, something like getting cut off is not a pleasant feeling on the receiving end.
Yes. So there's a couple things that jump into mind. Number one would be resetting yourself at the end of the day. And I don't know necessarily what your routine is. But I find that, you know, nighttime generally right before the eyes, you know, close, is generally very similar for many human beings, many parents, is that you do have, like, there's maybe a 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 minute window before you go to bed, to kind of potentially reset for the next day. I find that to be a really valuable time, at least with my patients, a valuable time to go over taking almost daily inventory of what were the biggest challenges throughout the day that I experienced. And I'll get to why I'm saying this in a minute is, if you can take stock of the day, at the end of the day, you take stock of the day and you look at the varying challenges and you just document, write down the daily challenge that you had, and then writing how they actually support you in your mission or highest value, or how they support you in being a parent, or, because if the mind's not able to see that there's inherent value in those challenges, then there's zero appreciation. And what that happens is now that anchors in the unconscious, and that drags your energy down because it uses energy. And now that lingers and carries and spills over to the next day. So now you're already starting the next day with a lower energy resource, because part of the mind is still in the day previous with a little stew over the challenge. So it's already, you're trying to be present, but yet there's still a spillover from the previous day that's sucking your energy, and it's taking time and space in your mind and body. And so the act at the end of the day of recalibrating, we talk about resilience, of resetting, springing back, is to have the mind be able to see value in all the challenges throughout the day. Because if you could close your eyes and go to sleep clear from the day, it's a totally different start point to the next day than if you carried over three or four circumstances from the previous day that didn't actually resolve and you didn't get appreciation or meaning from. So if we want to start the day in a higher energy place, then we need to be able to see value in the challenges that we experienced the previous day or previous week or previous month, or with, when I work with people, sometimes it's, geez, they've been struggling for 10 years or 15 years, but all that sucks energy from your system. And so your ability to be present today is partly based on how you are able to see value in previous hours, days, weeks, months, and years. So for some people, they might have a lot of work to do, but for others, it can go from a day to day, just helping to build up your energy at the end of the day, just by finding value in varying experiences that you had in the previous day. That to me is it's accessible for all parents. You know, not all of us have time for all different, therapies and things of that nature, but that's as simple. It's a piece of pen, it's a paper, and going in and finding value at the end of the day for your experiences and stuff that you thought was overly challenging. Because that challenge, that perceived challenge, is going to run the fight or flight system. So even though you think you've gone to sleep, the fight or flight system is still wrapped around that event or circumstance that you feel was more challenging than benefiting. And so until you find appreciation in that circumstance, it's sucking energy from your fight or flight system. So that's the importance to me of clearing the mind at the end of the day and providing you with access to more energy the following day.
So can you run us through an example of a parent appreciating a challenge from the day?
Sure. So let's say there was a big argument in the vehicle. Let's say you're driving your kids home from their activities. You're heading into the driveway. There's a ruckus in there. They're screaming and yelling, or, you know, some intense energy picks up. I think most of us have been there as parents. And maybe you get irritated, maybe you get frustrated, maybe you just blow a gasket. Okay. So let's say that, for example, you lose it, you blow a top. Now, there's a very high likelihood, although you're going to continue on with the day, there's a high likelihood that that event is going to be trickling through you. Number one, you might feel irritated, resentful, or frustrated that the kids behave that way. Number two, you might feel guilty of blowing your top. So now both of those things, when you're going to lay your head at the end of the day, both of those things are going to be circulating through your nervous system and consuming energy. So you would write down kids screaming in the vehicle. Okay. Where was the value in that? How did that benefit them and me in that moment? How did that screaming, well, maybe it allowed somebody else, maybe it allowed you to vent some frustration because you had built up frustration for a period of time. Then you want to go and find out, well, how is me blowing a top of benefit to me and to them? Well, maybe it showed them in that moment a particular standard that you weren't willing to go over. Maybe it showed them that they had overstepped the lines and overstepped their boundaries. So any expression that we have has value to it. And so we want to see, and we want to break down how that actually was valuable in that moment. Because if you can see
interrupt
order
you for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you're not telling us that what we want to do is lose it and blow a gasket. You're just saying that whatever happens, whether we're thrilled about it or not, there's still going to be some value in it.
Absolutely. Because I mean, we're all human beings. So we're all human beings and we're part animal too. So we have our animal limits that are only willing to tolerate so much. And so we will blow a top at times. It's not about, for me, it's about level-headedness and appreciation as opposed to trying to be one way or another. I mean, part of the role of letting go and acceptance is to allow yourself to be the way that you were in the moment, because the way that you were in the moment is based on how much energy that you have available in the moment. Okay, so how you were in the moment is based on how much energy that you have available in that moment. So if I drove home with my kids and I blew a top, I only had a certain amount of energy that was available in that moment and I blew the top. I couldn't control that. It's all the energy that I had. I didn't have any more. That was my best effort in that moment. And even the last chapter of the book is, do your best and your best is good enough. In the moment of blowing my top, that was the best I had in that moment. To bring an element of acceptance, appreciation, and letting and true letting go means you have to accept that in the moment. The best way to do that is to find value in that moment of me blowing my top. Well, it allowed me just to vent and release some tension. Okay, that was one. Okay, maybe another way that it was a value was, again, it set a standard in the vehicle. Another way was that it also educated them on the tone of my voice, because maybe I gave them a couple warnings and then I lost it. So now I've also re-educated them on my tone of voice and when they're pushing me to the brink's edge. And so these things are all of value because, the kids are learning and we're learning all in every single moment that goes on of our interaction. So they're gathering data and collecting information from us and we're doing the same. So everybody's learning. There's, in the family dynamic, this is constant intermingling of a learning process that's going on. And so at the end of the day, it's like, what did we learn from that experience so that we can have value in it? It's knee jerk for us. If one of our kids falls and cuts their knee, for example, but their shoes weren't tied up. Well, we might not say it at the moment, but later on we might say, if you want to prevent that knee scrape next time, you may want to consider, doing your shoes up. We could see that ultimately if they scrape their knee and the shoes were untied, that if we showed them that next time those shoes, if they tie their shoes up, that the likelihood of that happening next time is lessened. We're having value in that experience for them and showing them, hey, listen, there's value here. The learning process in this scraped knee was that you reminded yourself or you learned that you needed to tie your shoes up. And that's just really simple learning. But remember, in any type of explosive environment or angry environment, or something like that, is there's a certain amount of energy available and there's also learning that's going on in that environment. And for me, working with my clients is I'm going in constantly when they're stressed out and overwhelmed. I'm constantly just sitting down with them and going over and helping them to find value in those experiences. I'm doing the exact same thing with my clients one-on-one. Once they clear that and they see the value in it and they see what was learned and what people gained and the growth that was there, you let it go. Because you see the order, you see the meaning, you see the value in it. And that's finding magic in the mess. You're finding magic in the mess. So I'm not saying avoid the mess. I'm not saying you have full control over the mess, but there's going to be a mess. So then we got to find value in it.
And it's interesting because part of my mind is running this through in my household. And what I'm seeing is when you talked about, later in the day going through this, and talking with our kids about it. Yeah, we're talking about a little kid experience, but taking this from that teenager standpoint or the 20 something standpoint and okay, a little bit later we go back, all right guys, what can we learn from that experience? And having that group conversation is going to create, I think it's going to exponentially increase the learning that happens here and also build relationship, because as mom, I'm going to be like, okay, one of the things I learned is my energy is low, that I had this breaking point. I wasn't the person that I am at my core and at my very best is calm and helps to problem solve up front and avoid this escalation, but I don't have anything left. I was part of the escalation in this. And to be able to say that to our kids and go, all right, so this is something I'm learning is my energy is low and I need to do something about it. And then take this, let's tie it to my current situation. I go, okay, my energy is low. And as I'm looking at this, I'm going, I know the things I need to do. That's part of what I teach people is, right, what foundational strategies do you have in your life for taking care of yourself? and then those building block pieces, and how do you know when you're in crisis? So it's like, okay, am I doing my foundational strategies? No, why not? I don't have enough time. Okay, guys, here's what I'm seeing. I don't have enough time. And I'm looking at my life, and these are choices I can make. One of the choices is for other people to help out. Do any of you have time? But just to be carrying that conversation and be doing that problem solving together as a family, as a unit, the flip side of that being more yelling, more screaming, blaming, pointing fingers. And this pushes all of that out of the door. It says this, yes, the original yelling, screaming moment happened, but we don't continue on that. We go, all right, let's learn, let's find value. And again, if my energy's low, I may not be able to do it that day. I might have to say, guys, we had this incident and I really want to discuss it with you, but one thing I already see is that I'm not in a space where I can do that constructively. So I'm going to, and fill in the blank, but the blank really at that point ought to be what I'm going to do to take care of me to build that energy reserve back up again.
Yeah, and you know, it, like you said, in the like a group communication, it allows for some real truth to be revealed and vulnerabilities and humilities to come about too. And especially sometimes, you know, as parents, we may not want to be totally vulnerable in that moment, but you know, that our kids, obviously they learn from us and we're learning from them, and being able to be in that environment and be vulnerable and say, you know what? Yeah, I haven't taken the time for self-care. I mean, the kids are you know, again, they're learning from even our vulnerability in that moment. And that's dropping into their unconscious that, you know, mom was vulnerable in this moment and she's recognized she got to take care of herself. And oftentimes when we see somebody really be truthful, our tendency is much more open to being receptive to what they need. And group collaboration could definitely grow because the energy is there, you know, as we're more vulnerable and humble, the energy grows, you know, there's a letting go in the sense, and we're dropping some of the protective barriers that actually use up energy. And so as we free and liberate some of that energy in a group communication like that, you know, then now the sky's the limit because everyone's head and heart is connected. And now you're in a much more resourceful state where you can figure out maybe strategies moving forward for even the following week. So everyone moves forward with greater levels of kind of what we call coherence or connection or communication that at least at that moment is on the same page, and it feels really good to be that way. Would you agree?
Oh, I agree. And I'm envisioning it's still this conversation, and our teens will be more than happy to chime in and let us know when you say, you know, I have too much on my plate. Yeah, think? Yeah, think so, mom? Yeah, think you're doing too much? Let somebody else do something, mom. Or, you know, stop saying yes to everybody, whatever. I just, you know, they're great mirrors for us. Yeah. And yes, there can be a little attitude in there, which, you know, so I guess there's a question. So if you're doing something like this or just in everyday life, you know, we're trying to be in that learning space and we're trying to be, as you said, you know, we're being a little more open, we're being more vulnerable with our kids. How do we manage that? Still maintain our parent status and be, you know, be like this, but deal with, say, a mouthy teen. You know, it's one thing to think about this conversation with a child who's feeling kind and loving. It's another thing to have one who's like tossing barbs at you, especially when you're opening up and being vulnerable.
Yeah. So even if we just maybe took say like mouthiness or some real sharp attitudes, you know, what I've been noticing as my kids get older, we have teenagers now, and yeah, like the rebuttals, the sarcasm, the attitudes are growing, and the little sweet kind is not as often as little sweet kind, and even, you know, back in the day, little sweet kind, even if there was a little bit of a challenge there, it seemed to be you could recover quicker. But at the same time, you know, as they grow older, and there are these attitudes, I think it's really important. At least what I've noticed as a parent, it's important to, as quick as I can, remember my attitudes as a teenager. And what, and I've done this work on myself already, but just to reiterate, you know, is an attitude oftentimes and a mouthiness is a stretch of our independence. And when we, as we get older, there's been, you know, psychologists that have written a lot about this and even just about developmental psychology. And you know, it starts, their world starts in the core of the nucleus of the family, of course. And that's their space. But, you know, once you start hitting the teenage years, your next level, your next sphere of influence really is your friends and maybe like part-time job and employers. And the sphere of influence keeps growing and expanding. And so are they, they're evolving. And so we have to remember they're partly pushing themselves out the door in the sense that not that it's not that they are not wanting to be with us or not loving, but not loving us. It's not something to take personally. It's just a fact of human evolution in our biology and our psychology is that we evolve out beyond our core nuclear family. And so, but because we have such tight emotional bonds, what I've found is that sometimes we need to create that bit of friction or attitude in order to stretch our independence, because it's about kind and loving in the family, but to stretch outside that core nucleus, oftentimes we have to get angry with our parents, irritated, frustrated, and express ourselves so that we have energy to push ourselves out of that core nucleus for a moment and stretch ourselves more into community. And so the attitudes I found, and what I'm kind of curious about, is just how much of that is just an independent stretch? How much of it is just their emotions and hormone shifting that's going on? But it's undeniable. You can't deny that the system, our children, require to move their life beyond the family nucleus. And oftentimes with those tight emotional bonds, they need to express themselves emotionally to push themselves away in a sense. Because you're not going to say, you know, mom, do you mind if I just go and hang out at this area? I mean, not everything is fluff like that. You know, like the reality is sometimes as a teenager, you want your independence and you want to stretch it. And the only strategy you have is to get, you know, really angry at someone, because you know that it'll separate you two for a period of time. And so in that separation, I get my independence. And sometimes we learn that that's our only strategy. For some people, that's the only strategy they know, and they use that strategy well into their 30s and 40s and 50s. That anger is the only way that they can separate from someone to get some quiet time, some alone time, some independence. I'm sure there's parents that, you know, you blow a top and for some unknown reason, it gives you permission to go quietly in your room if you wanted to. Like that moment of bursting anger lets everybody know that I get permission to go away from you for a period of time. And so we got to kind of remember some of the human elements and human behavior that goes along with that. And then we can have a little empathy for that. And remembering part of ourselves in our teenage years of what did we do to create some divide, to create some separation for a period of time, to get some breathing room from our parents. What did we do? What was our strategies? Because chances are either you're still using them, we haven't outgrown them, or your kids are gonna use very similar strategies that you use, because it's just part of human development. So I found that it's much more, I'm able to stay much more present, kind of remembering the game of the divide, remembering the game of the stretch of independence. And I could laugh a good number of it off because I remember the game of it, of trying to stretch my independence and trying to stretch myself beyond the nuclear family. So I think if parents keep that in mind as their teenagers develop and grow and stretch, that it's not all about the parents anymore. It's about those little beings that they've taken time and invested their energy in and raising. Those little beings are wanting to go and flourish outside of the core nucleus, and they're wanting to go flourish. And sometimes if they feel just within their own being that they need to do certain strategies in order to get that independence, that sometimes they express themselves that way. And but it's good to know the game, you know, or remember the game of what's going on.
So we remember the game, And then with this idea of allowing and being present in the moment with our kids, what are some ways that we can actually handle it? Like, when do you say, hey, you know, that's disrespectful, that's not okay? When do you let things slide? When do you let the rules slide? When do you enforce them? You know, what are there some helpful tips or guidelines for walking through that little minefield?
My general rule is I don't set rules and guidelines in a heated moment. And I'm not at my best. I'm not at my most strategic. I'm not at my most aligned. I'm not in my heart. I'm not in a rational state. I'm usually in what we call a pre-rational state. Any arguing or, you know, real hard bantering, if there's frustration, irritation, it's generally not the time to set rules or to set a structure or to set something into place, just because you're not in your best frame of mind. Most of the stuff that I do or set in terms of my standards come after the moments during my time where I sense that there was maybe, let's say, something that was disrespectful. Anyway, you know, one of my kids said something that was really disrespectful that I felt in the moment. I try to stay a bit quiet in the moment. That's just my style, though. I stay relatively quiet because I know if I'm engaging in my lower centers of emotion, chances are I'm either going to say something that's not true or I'm going to say something right back that's probably disrespectful. I'll probably pull out some sarcasm or something like that that it just won't serve. You know, it won't serve, and I'm not in my best energy state. So I tend to make rules outside of normal daily living. I'll make rules at night or if I have, you know, some quiet time during the day at work or something like that. If there's even a little gap of time, I'll make rules then because I'm in a higher center of energy in that moment to be able to actually take a look and dissect it and then have proper communication afterwards. The communication generally in an argument is generally low-end communication, and it's usually coming from more of our animal nature, which is the fight-or-flight response, and not very much gets accomplished. People, you know, you release a little bit of tension, but real strategizing comes on when you have your frontal lobe, the highest portion of the brain on board, and your heart center. When those two are synchronized together, that's when you're most strategic, and you come up with the best solutions for everyone. In the heated moments, you're going to come up with the quick strategy that is going to be most comfortable, least painful, and most pleasurable for you in that moment. But that's not long-term vision setting. That's not something that's very, it's not generally sustainable. It's something that can flip itself around the following day or the following week. Oh, you made that rule last week, Mom. Yeah, I know. I was in a state. Well, now it's this way. Now it could be this way. Because in the heat of a moment, you become rigid. And so you're going to tighten the rules. Someone's challenging your values. You're tightening the rules and you're going to make tight rules. But then once the heat is over, you then become a little more flexible, lighter heads prevail, and then you might want to change the rule again. So instead of the flip-flopping nature, I tend not to make the rules right away. I tend not to do that in a state like that. I'll wait until I feel at ease, until I feel resourceful in my own being, and then make some rules then.
And so with all of this, you know, roller coaster and craziness, and yes, sometimes we're calm and relaxed and present, and sometimes we're blowing a gasket in the car, and sometimes we're dealing with a mouthy teenager. How do we know if we're doing this right?
Well, we all made it here, so we turned out. Now, we've made it, number one, we've made it. We made it through a parenting process because we all had parents, so we made it through. And we also generally recognize that we all have work to do on ourselves in some way, shape, or form. If you value any type of personal development, spirituality, family, things of that nature, you know that you probably in your own being have some work to do. So you could align with even those two things. Number one, the kids are making it through, and you know that they're going to have work to do as they get older. Because oftentimes what we're doing is, you know, what's the inner banter? Like, are we comparing ourselves? Are we creating expectations? What would we define as successful? What would we define as doing it right? If you understand that, and this is one of the core teachings when I teach, is that when you actually break any scenario or situation down, you could see that there is actually both support and challenge that's happening to your child at the same time. Let's say if I'm yelling at my child and challenging them, my wife might be in the background in the kitchen supporting them, or one of the siblings might come in and support them. And so when you start to break each scenario down, and this concept and I've done the work on this, is it's very liberating, is that any scenario has it's like a magnet. Like there's a plus and a minus on a magnet, and a magnet is only a magnet if it has the plus and the minus. It doesn't work if there's only a plus. It doesn't work if there's only a minus. It needs both plus and minus. And actually, that reflects all down to the cells of our body. There's positive and negative attributes in everything. And so when you actually look at a scenario, you'll see that it comes with both the challenges and the supports. It comes with the baggage, but it also comes with the learning. And so every scenario is like that. So essentially, this is a stretch, but for some minds, but essentially you can't screw up. Essentially you can't screw up, because there is a plus and a minus to everything. So if I'm yelling at my child and I'm yelling at them and giving the gears, there is it's physics. There's an equal and opposite force. So there's an equal and opposite force somewhere else in the family, in the dynamic. It's either in their own psyche that is balancing out my challenge to them, and they're supporting themselves by building up their sense of self-esteem, or it's in their immediate environment. But they cannot have an experience without a plus and a minus that goes on. So I can yell. Now, I have a certain standard in which I conduct myself, and my wife has a certain standard in which she conducts herself. On the big scale of the heart, everything's perfect. On the big scale of the heart, everything's perfect. Everything's evolving. Things are evolving. Things are being challenged and supported. Everything is growing. So from the heart perspective, it's all fine. From the mind's perspective, it now brings in morals and ethics and expectations that we have to try to navigate how our parenting skills are. And that it's a kind of a no-win zone, because the mind could rationalize pretty much anything. So part of it is moving beyond the mind into a trust, into a heart space of trust, and trusting that you're doing your best, your absolute best. When you trust that you're doing your absolute best, you know that your child is going to have challenges in their life. Life wouldn't be what it is if we didn't have some challenges. So they're going to have challenges, and they're going to have victories. And we have no control over that. So can we say whether we're doing a good job or not? I can take any parent in here and show them step by step that they're doing an amazing job raising their child. From the heart, if you look at it from the heart, you're doing an amazing job. If you try to live other people's lives and expectations, then you're going to be in a mode of judgment, self-judgment, and you tend to not win in that game. You just tend to not win, because you'll generally beat yourself up a little bit. If you feel like you've overly challenged, you'll beat yourself up. But also, if you're overly supportive, you're going to have people, you're going to raise kids that are juvenile and dependent. But if you're overly challenging, the kids are going to be overly independent. So there is, within the family unit, both of those going on, giving the child a balanced orientation. And that's the universal laws of polarity. It's going on constantly. Part of our job as a parent is just to see the magnificence of what we're doing. So like I said earlier, in the vehicle, blowing your top. If you could find the value in that, then you're free. But if you don't see the value in that, you're going to judge yourself as a parent, thinking you screwed up. But you didn't screw up. you did your absolute best in that moment with the what energy that you had. And there was learning for everybody involved. So if you appreciate that, you behaved perfectly in that moment. In that moment, you did. And you got to look for the perfection in that moment. Because the more you do that, the more you realize, damn, I'm a good parent. I'm doing my best. And I really haven't screwed up. But until you find appreciation, you'll beat yourself up because you won't see how perfect your behavior has been to help your kids grow. And I know I could probably take a couple hours to unpack that, but that's essentially what appreciation provides you and why I reinforce finding appreciation, gratitude in anything that goes on in as a challenge as a parent, because if not, that challenge is going to reverberate through your system and you're going to beat yourself up as a parent for it. And then you're going to think you're doing a poor job and you're going to demean yourself thinking that you're not a great parent or that you're going to screw your kids up. But if you just took the same scenario and saw the magic in it and saw how your kids benefited, how you benefited, how there was learning, you're free. You realize, God, I wouldn't have changed a thing in that moment. I'm a great human being. You find value in you again. And once you do that, you find value in the experience and you find value in you, you know you're doing your best job that you possibly can. And that's coming from the heart. That's not coming from the mind. You don't have to convince yourself. You're coming from the heart. You know that what you brought is value and you know that the circumstances that happened, there's value there. And that's why I reiterate to parents, we got to find appreciation and value in these things. Otherwise they drag and you end up judging yourself and beating yourself up for it and getting confused that you're not being a good parent, not doing a good job. I know that was a little heavy, but you know, that's to me, like that's the reality that I'm working with parents every single day is they're beating themselves up because they think they're ruining their kids and they're not doing a good job. And then once we go in and we dissolve the emotional baggage around these circumstances that they were beating themselves up, they realize, damn, I'm a great parent. I wouldn't change a thing. It's coming from you're taking the exact same experiences, dissolving the baggage around it, and they're seeing the light and they wouldn't change a thing. And they're seeing how great it was for their kids and how their kids are growing up and just perfectly. And to me, that's where the juice is. That's really where the magic is.
It reminds me of talking to someone who's been through a difficult time, and it could be a week, a month, years that they dealt with something challenging, painful, difficult, struggled. Inevitably, they say, no, I didn't enjoy doing that, but I'm so glad that I did. People ask, you know, would you go through that again? I do not relish the idea of dealing with all of that. But to come out and be who I am because of that, yes, I'd do it again. And that was what I thought of when you were discussing that. It's just that this is now in terms of our kids, is that, you know, we may beat ourselves up because we don't have time to take care of their every need. And maybe they have to cook the family dinners or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's them learning a life skill. And that's a good mm-hmm. thing. And it's, you know, it's a small example, but something that I think that we can at least wrap our mind around and start that journey of accepting the idea. So in a nutshell, what we've heard today, if I got this all right, is that not only kids need resilience, every human being does. So parents need resilience. And that as human beings, we are constantly springing back. We are moving between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems, from that fight, flight, and freeze to the rest, relax, and recover. And the way that we get to that rest, relax, and recover place is through gratitude and appreciation. So when we deal with challenges in our parenting and in our daily lives, we go through gratitude and appreciation to learn from them. We step into that place and go, what was the value in this? What can we learn from it? And we talked today about how you can even include the whole family in those conversations and, you know, strengthen your relationships and teach your kids about problem solving and self-help and moving forward by having those conversations together. And we need to recognize that when our kids are showing attitude, when they're getting mouthy, that this is actually a good thing because this is how they move out of the family. And it was interesting, Dr. Fonso, when you said they need sometimes to get angry to create enough energy to push away from their parents in that nuclear family. That just clicked something with something in my mind. I went, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. Because yes, that does create that energy there. And so we need to make sure that we aren't just reacting to what they're doing, but taking the time to respond to it, to take a fair look at why they're doing what they're doing and think through how we want to respond to that, not to get caught up in the moment of it, but to allow them the ability to stretch their independence while still holding to our values mm-hmm. and yeah. you know, being kind and respectful to people at the same time as being able to do what our kids need to do to separate from us. And you gave the tip of not setting rules and guidelines in an emotional state. I think that is a great tip. You said when the highest form of communication is when our frontal lobe is on board and we are in our heart space. And that's a nice little, a little guide to go, hey, am I actually able to think and feel at this moment?
Yeah.
And most importantly, which is the question that you promised to answer before we did the interview and did answer so beautifully. I know it's a very difficult concept as parents to wrap our minds around. And I find the older my kids get, like I said, the more that I question, did I do this right? Or think back and regret things I did or didn't do. But I'm starting to see those times in a different light as well after what you said today. And that is that, yes, we are doing it right, that our kids are learning from us. And yes, obviously we still want to live according to our values and be kind, caring human beings, but everything yeah. else that happens along the way, if we're doing our best in the moment, then yeah, that's right. And that's good for our kids. So for parents who are listening and would like to connect with you or learn more, where can they find you?
You can find me on stephenfonso.com, and we're also on Facebook and Instagram, but stephenfonso.com. And there's a free guide that they could download for 7 Steps to Resilience, a free guide that they can download. And then they also get weekly kind of reflections from me on heart-centered leadership. That's one of our things, because I feel anyone who aligns with the heart, you're a leader in the family, whether you know, you're a parent, or you don't have to be, you know, quote unquote a leader, but I feel like every parent is a leader in their home. So a heart-centered leader for me is about someone that values the heart, values themselves, and wants to lead life from the heart. So that's on stephenfonso.com. They can go there.
And of course, there are links from our show notes as well. So Mighty Parents, thank you so much for joining us today and for being part of the Mighty Parenting community. Remember to visit mightyparenting.com. You can get detailed show notes there for any episode and see what else we have to support you. Remember, you are a mighty parent and you've got this. I will see you next week.